Welcome to our Rush extravaganza. Welcome to Signals from Mars. This is Victor, and this is our Rush albums countdown. Man, I've already been receiving all types of comments about whether an album should be ranked here or there or someplace else. Check out the episode next. See if you agree with the voting.
I'm ready.
Let's do it!
The Rush fan base is very passionate. If you've ever listened to this show and you know our lovely panelist guest, Johan Edström from Sweden, he is very passionate about his Rush. He's not the only one. There's plenty of people that have reached out to me or made comments online about, hey, this album should be in the top 10. That's nonsense. There's no way that this album, you know, shouldn't be this place or the other place. So if you're a fan of Rush, if you're checking this episode out for the very first time, how this all goes down is that I ask people to vote. I have them submit their 10 favorite albums, in this case by Rush, and then I tally the votes up. And what I do is if an album is number one, it gets 10 points. Number two gets 9 points. All the way down to the 10th album on the list, that gets 1 point. For all the jokers that say, well, in no particular order, well, whatever order you sent it in, and I see first, whichever album I see first, that's your number one. So I compile the list, and this is what we have. This episode is what we have. It is us discussing Rush, and there's, as I'll mention during the episode, there's a lot of different kind of story arcs, different time periods within the band that make it unique and special, and I don't want to give too much more away besides that, but this episode was fun to do. I will confess to not being the hugest Rush fan in the world, but I love talking about music, and I loved going back and rediscovering a lot of the music, which made me love this band. Yeah, I'm not the hugest fan, but I still love a lot of their music. So it's fun to connect with people and just talk about bands. And I'm the type of person that I can watch a documentary, for example, and not enjoy a band, and come out wanting to listen to the band, or gain a certain sense of respect for them. And with this, it's no different. I mean, I always mention this. These are just discussions about music amongst friends, and it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun to go back, rediscover, or check out a band for the first time for some people, and hopefully this episode does that. And it doesn't mean that everyone has to love them. Doesn't mean that everyone has to enjoy what they've done over the years. But it's still a fun discussion. So this episode does contain some of my patrons. It does include Anthony Mackey. It does include Johan, who I mentioned. It includes Metal Dan and Brad Dahl, as well as Mike Jones. Outside of them, I do want to say thanks to Sean Richman, Chris Sinzak, Tony Espin, who was in the chat for a little bit there, Ed Ferguson, who couldn't join us, Jose and Gabriel in Connecticut and New Jersey, respectfully, another person in New Jersey for now, Mr. Chris Vaglio, and who else? Jeremy Weltman, who was at a show seeing Livewire and AC/DC tribute band, which he gave excellent reviews for. Steve Hoker and Mr. Steven Saylor. So thank you guys for all of your support. You can become a patron for as little as $2 a month and appear during these shows if you so choose to. You can vote for upcoming episodes, upcoming lists, just by following on social media and submitting your list that way. That is all, folks. Let's get on with the countdown. Welcome one and all to the May 10th edition of Signals from Mars. If you've been under a rock and you haven't been following the show, tonight is our Rush Countdown. Let me go around the horn and introduce our illustrious guests tonight. Fresh off of M3, we have Mike Jones in New Jersey. How are you, Mike?
Doing great, Victor. How about yourself?
Doing excellent. Out on the West Coast, we have Metal Dan. Dan, how are you?
Hello, Victor. Clockwork Angels.
There you go. With his bucket hat, and also fresh off of M3, Mr. Yarg Metal, yargmetal.com, Brad Dahl. Brad, how are you?
Fantastic. Wow. Can I just say something about somebody on this panel? Actually, everybody here is awesome. This guy right here, if you ever need a wingman to go to a show with, that's the guy. Okay. I had more fun hanging out with him and yeah, good times.
Was a great 2 days.
It's awesome. It's awesome that you guys had the time to spend together like that and you just didn't bust a quick hello out. All right, and last but not least, the Rush connoisseur, Johan. I dare not pronounce his name from Sweden.
Please try.
I don't have it spelled in front of me. Wait, I can find it. Where is it?
No, it's okay, Victor. Ederström in Swedish, Ederström in English.
We can mispronounce both of those. Ederström.
Why? That? Yeah. Oh, excellent, Brad. Excellent.
Well, that's because he's Norwegian.
Yeah,
he's
Norwegian
descent. So he's got, you know, his tongue places itself in the right spots.
It does.
Anyway, all right. So we're here to talk about Rush. Rush have 19 studio albums, and every album was voted on at least once.
Wow.
So what we're going to do is we're going to recap real quickly 19 through 11, and then we'll take our time with 10 through 1. But at 19... it is more than one little victory. It is Vapor Trail.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Mm-hmm. At 18.
Wait. I have a question before we go on.
Yes.
Okay. Who here prefers the remixed version of Vapor Trails than the regular one?
I haven't heard the remix that. I'm the only one.
Okay. Yeah. I know what you mean, Brad. I heard the album when it was new with the original mix. And for me, that's normal. I know the mix is bad, but it's like Born Again with Black Sabbath. That's how it sounds. So good songs on that album. Very good songs.
It's part of the ambiance. All right. So at 18 is Counterparts.
Hmm.
At 17, it's kind of surprised me, but is what it is. Caress of Steel.
Mm-hmm.
At 16, Vertigo, Test for Echo.
Mm-hmm.
All right. At 15, Hold Your Fire.
What? Why?
There we go. We need to make a drinking game out of this. Every time Johan exclaims, we need to throw one back.
Okay. At 14, the one that has that does not have the man on Mike Jones' t-shirt. Oh. It is the self-titled debut from Rush.
Mm-hmm.
13. So.
Mm-hmm.
12. Clockwork Angels.
Mm-hmm.
And at 11, my number one and my favorite, Snakes and Arrows.
Mm, great album. Mm.
So, any surprises for you guys that any of those did not crack the top 10? Johan, obviously, Hold Your Fire.
Yes, that's a really underrated album for me. Great songs, and I think it's a soundtrack to the 80s, as a lot of those albums that they made during that period. Holy Fire is, I don't know, it's one of my favorite albums. Perhaps it's soft, perhaps it's a little bit not so much rock, but I think there is songs on that album like, I mean Mission, Prime Mover. Greatly underrated album, but I think I wasn't a Rush fan back then, but when they toured US, Canada, they had a great big audiences for that album, if I'm not mistaken. It was a big album, but it has gotten a lot of bad attention after during the years. So, comments?
Yeah, I think more than anything, like with a lot of other bands and just trends that come along, a lot of people say, "Oh, well, those are the albums where they used keyboards." And it's like, well, they used keyboards going all the way back to the 70s, all the way up to the end of their career. They just kind of pigeonholed them because they were a 70s band and they wanted to bring in, you know, bands from the 80s and kind of bring in a fresher, whatever. They wanted to give Maiden and Priest and Scorpions and these bands more of a push at the time, Motley Crue, Bon Jovi, so on and so forth. And they wanted to push Rush out of the way. They were still doing good at their shows, as you mentioned, Johan, because people were there for the bread and butter, what people, you know, had become to love from the band. And the band was looking to do different things, I think. So, you know, being the band that they are, they were never a band that searched out radio hits. I mean, that was till the end. They got on the radio due to the strength of how good their music was. I mean, they weren't selling, as you're saying, they weren't selling anything for some of these albums, even the ones that came after this, but their shows were packed. They still had a diehard audience that was following them. And it's funny because a lot of these albums, I remember as they came out, I mentioned Presto, I mentioned Test for Echo and Counterparts and even Vapor Trails. When they came out, I remember people being super stoked about them, being, oh, this is the old Rush back again, and so on. And years later, it's funny how a lot of people with revisionist history don't give you that same kind of opinion on those albums. I personally do think that probably their last two albums, Clockwork Angels and Snakes and Arrows, are two great albums that unfortunately are overlooked by the general public.
Hmm.
And these albums are probably a lot more solid than some of these other albums that came before it and probably closer to kind of what got the band on a lot of people's radar. But a lot of it has to do with what we've talked about in the past. The producer was Nick Raskolnik, a huge fan of the band, who wanted the band to be Rush, didn't want the band to be Dream Theater, didn't want them to be, you know, he didn't want them to jump on the coattails of another band that was popular, that was influenced by them. So he kind of got them back to where they needed to be in a lot of instances. So, but I think that's why, I think like everything else, there's stigmas with people saying, oh, well, you know, Hold Your Fire wasn't a good album because it was the keyboard album, because it was this, because it was that. But it really wasn't. That's the shit that people were just being fed. And instead of people sitting down and listening to the album and figuring out if they liked it or not, they kind of went with the flow and decided to pan it. So, because they, I mean, one last thing before we jump into the top 10. I don't see that Hold Your Fire varies that much from some of the other 80s albums that were a lot more popular than what's on that album. I've mentioned this before. The track that's gotten the most airplay in the U.S. of all time, I would figure is Tom Sawyer, but it's actually New World Man.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
And then, okay. Yeah. Huh. And that's a track straight out of the 80s. So, go figure. All right. So, anyone else want to touch on any of those albums?
No, I mean, as far as my personal ranking went, I went ahead and did all 19 because I'm OCD and my wife is a huge Rush fan, so I had to satisfy her curiosity as well. But of those mentioned, I think Power... or Clockwork Angels was the only one that hit my top 10. So, you know, it feels pretty much in line with my view as well.
Okay. Excellent. So let's jump on into the top 10. At 10 is Roll the Bones.
Mm-hmm.
Again, this is an album that when it came out, I remember a lot of people saying, wow, it's them back to their rock roots. It's them being a little heavier. And this is, I hope I'm not screwing this up, but I believe it's Roll the Bones, then Presto, then Vapor Trails, if I'm not mistaken.
Presto came before Roll the Bones.
Yeah.
Presto came before Roll the Bones.
Yes.
Okay. All right, so that was kind of the kickoff of them kind of quote unquote becoming rock again. I think that the band has kind of gone in cycles where they've had like three or four albums that have, you can kind of interchange them because it's almost as if they were doing their own story arcs. You know, I think Presto, Roll the Bones, Counterparts, And Vapor Trails are kind of like an extended photo album between those four albums. They kind of, it, at least to me, it feels like while they were recording and writing those albums, they were kind of influenced by the same stuff, and those four kind of follow the same flow. But anyway, Roll the Bones. Who wants to talk about this album?
Yeah, I can talk about any album.
Okay, go ahead, Johan. You first.
First of all, I like this album. It's well produced, as every Rush album is. Great songs. The opening track, Dreamline, is all-time favorite. The lyrics, the music, it's fantastic. And Bravado. Amazing song. If you haven't heard it, check it out. It's, you know, Neil writes great lyrics. Easy lyrics, but good. Speaks to you. So this album is, it's great, but not one of my biggest favorites. But the big songs are huge. And perhaps not so big songs I don't listen to that much anymore. So, yeah. Anyone else who has any comments on that album or perhaps have seen them on this tour?
On the tour.
What?
Yeah, in the U.S. they played a lot. They'd play Orange County, Los Angeles often. Yeah.
With the Primus as opening act?
With that Clayton.
Primus. Yeah.
That was a big tour.
Yeah, I know. Wow.
Yeah.
That's sure.
I think that was the last tour I saw them, though. That's where I kind of stopped. Yeah.
Did you stop because of this show, or did you think they can't get better than this? I'm done.
I think I peaked, and I'd seen Rush enough times, and then my wife, she was actually liked them more. She would go with her side of the family and go to the shows, and I'd say, see ya. So yeah, I think I at that point I had had enough. But that's just it's nothing against Rush. It's just a kind of a been there, done that, because I'd seen about five of the tours. Yeah.
I think that's fair enough. Yeah. I gotta say, wow. This album, I'd kind of drifted from buying their stuff and spent a lot of time listening to them until this album. When this album came out, it brought me back in. And I think the quality of the songs is just incredible. I love the way it sounds. I think Geddy's singing is... it's in a range that is actually really nice to listen to. I mean, even Shelley, my wife, who doesn't really care for early Rush because of his voice, she loves this album. And she'll always be like, yeah, let's listen to that. So this album was huge for me. And I think just across the board, it's a really, really solid album. I can listen to the whole thing and not skip anything and have fun with it. And it's fun to play bass along with, too.
There you go. We are also joined by Anthony Mackey. Anthony, hope you're doing well today.
Yep. All good.
Awesome. Mike, go ahead. Seems like you've been holding back this whole time. You've been about to talk, and then someone else has interjected. So go ahead.
I mean, it's the Johan show, really. We're all just here to support him.
No, I'm here to hear your memories from Rush, because you have probably more than me. So go ahead, please.
I was fortunate enough to see this show live as well. It was a great one. I think that was my third in a row. I think it started with Hold Your Fire, so 87, 88, somewhere in there, and then caught most of them from there on out for the rest of their career. So love this album myself. All the songs are accessible. None of them are, epic 20-minute songs. They're all, reasonable length. So good ones to go in, various mixes, or to listen start to finish, either way. Big fan.
All right.
In this year, this time period, I was looking back, like, when's the best time of my life? And it was, about 87 through 92. I think those were the best years of concerts coming through constantly. You could see, pretty much any band coming through. There was a show practically every night in the Los Angeles, Orange County area, with the Bon Jovis and I don't know who else, and Rat and whatever. It was just there. It was available. Queen, whatever. It was a great time.
Hmm.
Sorry.
No, that's fine. Any story like that is always cool to throw in there, because it does give you a sense of what was going on at the time and how all this kind of pieces together and fits in. So, all right, cool. At number nine, we have go ahead, Johan.
This is my number one.
Okay.
Yeah. Power Windows is, for me, the soundtrack of the 80s. It's the perfect 80s album. It's very, very much synthesizers. It's very cold. The songs are great. It's easy to listen to. For me, every song is almost a hit. So,
wow.
Now, if you haven't checked that album out, you should. It's so great. Geddy plays that heavy English bass. I don't know how he does it at the same time as he plays keyboard and synthesizer on his feet, but it's a masterpiece. I know that Alex Lifeson wasn't that pleased at that time because he wasn't getting enough space, but the creativity of the band was not at the top, but for me at the top, but I think they peaked here. This is the peak from the 80s rush. Moving Pictures started the 80s movement, and Power Windows is the peak. So this is, I love this album. Thank you.
Okay. Anyone else on Power Windows?
Why?
Because, Johan, you said it so eloquently. I really don't have much more to add. It's a very good sounding album.
There you go. All right. At number 8. Hemispheres. Who wants to touch upon this one?
I can talk about any of them.
Yeah, that one's too early for me. That's 78. That's way before I was listening to Rush.
Almost ahead, way before I was. It's almost way before I was born, but I think this album is the first song, Cygnus. You know, the song that covers the whole A-side.
Mm-hmm.
I don't listen to that song a lot, but Circumstances, The Trees, and La Via Strangiato are three of Rush's most amazing songs ever made, and I think that's why Rush have sold almost 50 million albums. Those three songs are very important. So
it's interesting how, I mean, with this and with other albums, how they would just go ahead and do one long composition for one entire album side. And given their popularity, I've never heard anyone that's a fan of the band complain about that.
No, why would you? It's what you want.
Right. But I mean, I think that you have a lot of fickle music fans out there that would come out of the woodworks to say, oh, well, you know, this is boring because it's 18 minutes long and it's this or it's that. But I mean, there's pieces of what they did here, and they're complete songs that were staples of theirs up until the end, coming off of here. So, and it was, they did a 40th anniversary reissue not that long ago. So, go ahead,
Victor. The thing, if you look at what came before this, I mean, I bought this album on vinyl when it first came out, and I loved it. I mean, they pretty much set it up with starting with 2112, that, hey, we're going to have you know, album sides that are going to be one song. And the precedent was set. I mean, if they'd have come with all their previous albums doing 4 or 5 minute songs and that's it, and then came to this, I could see them losing people. But it is, as Anthony so eloquently said, that's what you want. That's what the people wanted at this time. They wanted to hear this. I think Farewell to Kings wasn't quite as epic as a lot of the fans wanted. But this album checked all those boxes. And again, it's a good listen.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it's 18 minute songs, but they're a dynamic 18 minutes. It's movements. It's like, listening to a symphony. It goes, waxes and wanes, and it takes you up and down with the changes to the sound. It's not a boring 18 minutes. It's not just repetition. And I think that's really the key to, putting out music like that, that is still accessible.
Makes sense.
This is the Trees was the first Rush song I ever heard.
Okay.
Really?
Yeah.
Where did you hear it, Anthony?
Oh, off a compilation album.
Oh, okay.
And I still love it. I think that was a good first song.
Yeah. It's interesting as well because it isn't quote unquote a radio hit. Whereas a lot of their here's the thing, and I think Johan mentioned it before. Each album has big songs on it. They've been able to, and this is why I think as a touring band they've been able to throw in new music, was play the classics as well. They were never a nostalgia act, I don't think. The only time that they really ever did a any nostalgia type tour was when they celebrated their 30th anniversary, where that was just strictly greatest hits. But Trees has always been a staple in their live show. So you get Trees or Passage to Bangkok, stuff like that, where a lot of people would consider, oh, well, that's a B-side. Well, to a Rush fan, that was kind of commonplace. That was, it was still one of the, it's still part of the bread and butter behind the band. So. Cool. All right. So Hemispheres was 8. Moving on to number 7. Grace, Under Pressure. So again, this to me is one of those that, if we're talking about cycles, to me, Grace Under Pressure, Power Windows, and Hold Your Fire is kind of that arc that they had in the mid to late 80s. Johan, you were saying that to you, it kind of started with Moving Pictures, though.
Mm-hmm.
Grace Under Pressure, what's your take on that album?
One of the best, of course. Surprise. The album I think I listened to the most, together with Power Windows. It's a great album, no weak songs. I like the sound of it. It's very 80s, of course. They still have some more early 80s of the ska movement in it, but it's very, I can't say the English words, but it's like, it sounds very cold, as most of the bands did during the 80s. All the after the war, if you know what I mean, after the Third World War, World War were very present, and it's very present in this record as well. Rush themselves were not happy with this record. They thought it was badly produced. I can't see why, but they are picky guys, I guess. So I love this album. Amazing. Absolutely amazing.
That's funny because they worked with Paul Northfield on this album. I mean, yeah. he wasn't the producer, but he did quite a bit of work with the band over the years. So I guess he's credited for synthesizer programming. So interesting. All right. But he's done, I mean, he's engineered and mixed other albums, which he's actually done a lot. Worked on Permanent Waves, Exit Stage Left, Moving Pictures, Signals, Grace Under Pressure, as we mentioned, The Show of Hands, and Different Stages, Vapor Trails. He's done a lot over the years. So that's interesting to hear that even though they weren't happy with the mix, they still worked with somebody repeatedly over the years who was somewhat involved in it. Although, yeah, for that album, it says synthesizer programming.
Yes.
Yeah.
I have read a little bit too many Rush books.
Is that possible?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
you know, it's interesting to note that this is the first album that Terry Brown, you know, that they parted with him on, not badly or anything. I think they just want to try something different, and they just couldn't find a producer. They ended up doing all the pre-production, just the band, without any outside help. So, yeah, it's kind of interesting to hear that they're not happy with the way it turned out.
No, they weren't.
So I wonder if that. Johan,
they were really happy about the music videos, though. They used the same video producer as Apple did for some of their early computers. So you can tell that if you watch the video. Yeah.
Cool.
The Rush books that you're reading, are they in Swedish or are they in English?
English.
Okay.
Do they have lots of pictures for Victor? So if he wanted to try to read it?
No, but I have a lot. I have all Neil's books, of course, as well. They're good.
I will profess to not being the greatest reader in the world, although I did read a 100-page book in 4 days. A few weeks back, and I read my very first book in Spanish after that. So there you go. While we're talking about other things that are not... Oh, this is excellent. So I had this all set up before we started the show, and it now disappeared. As soon as I saw Mr. Mackey, I wanted to talk about his great logo. So if you are so inclined to want to support the show, we have some nice merch, and we have two new pieces of merch, which I mentioned the last time. We have, since we have a kind of a grayed out logo, I've named it the Distressed logo, and we have a Distressed Woman's Premium V-neck shirt. And we have a Distressed Classic Pullover hoodie now. Mm. This thing, when I set this up originally, you could see the planet more. And for some reason, with the screenshot that I took today, it's hardly visible. But I'm assuming that gets printed on as well. So I will see it in a few days.
Well, that design, it was designed to go on black. So I don't think you're going to see it. Okay. As much on gray. I'm sure you still will.
Yeah.
But not as much.
Okay. We do have the Brad Bucket hat.
It's been concert tested. I got so many compliments about it.
I can vouch for its effectiveness live in person.
It's It was raining, held up in the rain. It traveled. You put it in your suitcase or whatever. It comes out looking fresh as a daisy. And yeah, don't go to sleep on the beautiful graphics there.
There you go.
Yeah. You can't go wrong with this hat. I'm just saying.
Excellent.
So moving on here. At number six. Let's see. Buzzing here. I got to mute some of the other stuff here. Anyway, at number six, A Farewell to Kings.
Ooh, good one.
All right. Who wants to touch on this album? Oh. Go ahead, Mike.
That's my number two. So, okay. Big fan. So this hurts a little bit to be this far down the list for me personally. Xanadu, one of the greatest epic Rush songs of all time. Closer to the Heart, Cygnus X, like just awesome, awesome songs. I can listen to this song album every day and not get sick of it. Just amazing.
Cool. Okay. Anyone else?
I'll chime in here. When this album came out, I mean, of course, we bought it, listened to it. The production was quite different than the previous albums. Everything was kind of on the dry side, and I know they recorded this over in England, I believe. Where's Jeremy when you need him?
They recorded it in Wales.
I apologize. Wales. Okay. This is the first time I saw Rush was on this tour, headlining the Santa Monica Civic.
Wow.
And UFO warming up on their, Lights Out tour. And this is the first time they really, they brought the keyboards on stage and the pedals and all that. And it was an impressive event to watch them. Well, mostly watch Geddy do all that stuff. But it just didn't, I don't know, at the time it just kind of landed a little soft for me. I like it much better now. It's aged very well for me. But at the time it wasn't, that's the problem when you're young and you're a fan, you kind of have an idea of what you want the band to do. And when they don't do that, you're like, oh crap. And I think that's kind of where I was at the time, I think it's a great album.
Johan, what do you think of the album?
Well, obviously I was just close to being born when it was released. But I think it's great. Good songs. For me, it's a part of the journey to become the band that I love. It's the prequel to Hemispheres, so it's good, but not perfection.
Okay, cool. So before we jump on into the top five here, let me just recap 10 through 6. At 10, we had Roll the Bones. At 9, we had Power Windows. At 8, we had Hemispheres. At 7, we had Grace Under Pressure. And at 6, we had A Farewell to Kings. Up next, this album has been already mentioned by more than one of you. It is 2112. Question to Brad. Was there ever any anyone saying that they were satanic due to the album cover?
Oh, hell yeah. Yeah. You got to remember back in the 70s, I mean, it was hard to go to a rock concert and not have a bunch of Bible thumpers out there with megaphones yelling at you and telling you you're going to hell and all that kind of stuff, which of course I thrived on. I was like, bring it, boys, bring it. So there was plenty. Oh yeah. People went nuts over that album cover. So yeah, the answer is yes.
Okay.
Definitely Satan influenced.
All right. Who wants to talk about the album itself?
I will. Because everybody's not jumping at this one. This is my number one. I'm kind of, my address here is 2114, and I was going to try to change it, you know, go to the county, but you know what a hassle that is, because I thought, wouldn't it be cool to live at 2112 something, you know? That'd be great to have a street, like your street address, but it ain't going to happen. So anyway, this is the very first Rush album I ever heard. Picked it up based on, I'm not even sure what it was. It certainly wasn't the kimonos on the back. I mean, that looked a little bit squirrely, you know, but because I was looking for hard rock, but I think I heard something somewhere about these guys being a really hard rock band. So got it. And yeah, totally blown away. Because the first thing you hear is, you know, 2112, whole side one of the album. Yep. And that to me is like one of the greatest songs ever written. It's just unbelievable. I feel like the whole side two is just B-sides. I mean, because it's the B-side of the album. And there's some great, great songs on that side as well. And so this album to me, this is what got me into Rush. And everything else was measured against it until I got older and realized that you should just take each album based on its own merits.
Yeah, it's interesting how much side one got played on U.S. radio.
That is incredible. I mean, because it's how let me see, how long is that?
20 minutes, 20 minutes, 34 seconds. And up until when I lived in the States, in the early 2000s, this still got radio play, where it was amazing how you couldn't get a 4-minute song on the radio, but Rush was getting a 20-minute plus song on the radio.
Yeah, it's the ultimate pee song for the DJ. Actually, this is more probably the poop song. put it on and go.
Bingo! That was on my card.
Gonna have to throw that on a t-shirt. The put it on and go. There you go. Anyway, all right. 2112, who else?
Well, this was the second Rush stuff I heard not long after hearing Trees. One of my older brothers got, I think, maybe a real tape or a taped tape of this.
Oh, wow.
And we used to listen to it in my parents' van, like on long journeys. That's my memory of it anyway. Off of one of those like tape recorders, you know, that are flat, they lie down.
Yeah, yeah.
And it would be played on that, sort of like mono.
Cool.
And I just remember being on long journeys at night, and you know, the whole section where he finds the guitar just sort of echoing around this transit van driving at night. That's my memory of this. And you know, and when you're probably 13 or something, you know, it's quite impressive. You know, you feel very grown up listening to something like that. And yeah, so that's 2112 was basically it for a long time for as far as Rush was concerned.
Right.
I think my older brother got Exit Stage Left later on, but yeah, like we were happy enough with just that.
So wait a second. So Anthony, let me get this right. You were on a trip. Were you playing this out loud, or did you have headphones?
Oh no, this is before the days of headphones. Like we'd be
in your parents in the vehicle?
No, they would have been driving it. Like
they could hear it.
Yeah.
They weren't like,
no.
They were cool.
So we used to travel around in a van with the whole family in the back.
I think you might have the coolest parents ever then. Well done.
Well, they might not be able to hear it because it was just on this little tape recorder. But
okay.
You know, a memory, and maybe I'm sort of misremembering this, but it's a memory that's always stuck with me.
It's a great memory.
Yeah, that's very cool. Anyone else with 2112? Johan, you're saying no? You mean you're turning down the ability to talk about a Rush album?
Well, a lot has been said, so I don't have the I don't have so much memories of that album. I've listened to it, of course, a lot afterwards, and I love the title tracks and side A, but that's not an album that I go back to a lot.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's the way it is.
I think it is an interesting contrast, though, having, you know, 2112 on side one and then a whole bunch of 3 minute some odd songs on side two, you know, just to fill the space.
A Passage to Bangkok, of course, I've seen live, but it's a good song. And yeah, that's the way it is. Yeah. I like 80s Rush. Yes.
All right. Real quick hello to Tony, who's in our chat. Hope you are doing well tonight, sir. All right. So at number four, you find the right album cover. It is Fly by Night.
How is that number four?
You can't step all over Johan's part.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I'm not screaming that it should be higher. I'm just like, you know. Okay, go ahead. You guys talk about this album. Convince me why it should be number four. Come on, bring it. Tell me why it should be four.
This is what always happens when we do these lists. No one is ever 100% happy. And also we have to take into consideration what lies ahead. Because of the fact that, you know, there's 19 albums. We've already discussed 15 of them. There has to be something that's, you know, and I'll say this. The top three albums were clearly ahead of everything else. The number one is a landslide. But anyway, Fly By Night, why do you think it shouldn't be four, Brad?
Well, I think the quality of the songs is just, I think they were still figuring things out. And so I just don't think the songs are that strong. I mean, I like the album.
Okay.
It's nothing. It's not one I would go, I want to put that album on, listen to the whole thing.
Okay, so I get it. You're saying it's too high as opposed to why isn't it higher?
Correct. This is the reverse Johan effect.
All right. I misunderstood you. I thought you were saying that you wanted this album to be higher. Now you're saying that it should be lower. Okay, gotcha. And that is interesting because exactly what you said, for a lot of people, you know, the first album was them trying to be Zeppelin. The second album was kind of a more of them experimenting. And I think for a lot of people, 2112 is probably the first authentic Rush album.
It's the album that saved them, because I think they were about to get dropped after recording this album. It didn't do very well at all. And 2112 saved the band. So I don't know. Like I said, convince me that it needs that it should be their fourth best album. Somebody, okay. Tell me, right. Tell me why you think it's that great. Because somebody had to vote for it higher than four for it to get to four.
Yeah, absolutely. Mike,
I'm not saying it's a bad album. I mean, I like it, but I mean, guy, when Bytor and the Snow Dog, which I do like now, at first I was like, this is like 8 minutes of noise. So there's a song in there somewhere. Now, like I said, I do enjoy it, but it's a ridiculous event, in my opinion.
Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, I mean, I had this one, you know, my 10 spot, just from a nostalgia standpoint. This was actually the first Rush album that I ever had personally. Picked it up probably.
And that's a great reason to put it up in the top.
78, 79.
I mean, if it means something to you,
the nostalgia factor is stronger in this one. But to Brad's point, you know, the quality of the songs isn't quite there yet. So yeah, it does feel a little high at four, but asking, you know, what's the worst chocolate you've ever had? You know, all chocolate's good. Come on, like, you know, it's all good. You know, 19 great albums. They all have their strong points, so not going to knock it.
Johan, where did this album sit on your list?
I don't think it were on my top 10, but it's good. I like Bythor and Snow Dog, best I can.
You're the guy.
But it's good, but not my Rush yet.
Okay. Anthony, sum this album up in one sentence.
I listened to it the other day and I enjoyed it. How's that? That's a
perfect sentence. Yeah, we should put that in a review somewhere. Yeah, that's great.
So let's see. Um, 75% of the people that voted for this album, whether it was it was slotted high or not, a lot of people voted for it. So that's
okay.
That ended up at four.
Okay.
All right. Number three. It is Signals. All right. Who wants to take Signals on first?
I think Mike would agree with me. It should have been a greyhound on the cover, not a Dalmatian. But
absolutely. Would have probably moved faster. But I'm just... Yeah, I think for me, single quality wise, this is a great album, top to bottom. You know, I mean, you've got Subdivisions, Analog Kid, Digital Man, New World Man, Countdown. You have some great songs to throw out. Yeah, I think this was a very accessible album. You know, nothing too extreme, nothing too out there. So yeah, I can see the popularity of it definitely. Being out there and, you know, no 20 minute epics here. So a lot easier of a listen.
Victor, didn't you say New World Man was the most played song of theirs?
Most played song on US radio by the band.
Wow. That is unbelievable. I mean, that's cool, but I would not have picked that. I would think Subdivisions. I think I've heard that a lot more than New World Man, but maybe it just stood out more. Subdivisions that's like one of their top 10 songs.
Yeah, but I think New World Man got a lot of airplay at the time when this album came out. I don't recall if there was a video for it or not. I'm assuming that there was. So, I mean, there's that MTV factor if there if
Yeah, I'm telling you, okay, if you got a band, Anthony, back me up on this, and something's gone wrong with the drums and he's fixing his snare or whatever, and you got a keyboard up there, if you started playing the keyboard part to Subdivisions, everybody in the crowd would go nuts. It's true.
Depends. Are you at a Travis Scott show or what, what show are you at?
I think it would even go to over at a Travis Scott show. I'm just talking about playing down the pub or something. You know, not, yeah, yeah. The kind of shows that we do.
Yeah.
I know for a fact, because I've been in that position, and the guy started playing on the keyboards and everybody in the crowd just like is focused all of a sudden. It's like, yeah, you're going to play the rest of it? Unfortunately, the rest of us don't know this song, but and we got nobody who can sing it. So that's a problem. But I'm just telling you, that keyboard riff is, it'll bring everybody in the audience on board for a moment.
Johan, hopefully that will be an upcoming show.
Hmm.
You want spoilers, though.
Yeah.
All right. Cool. Anyone else on Signals?
Yes, of course. It's an amazing album. Mike said it all. 10 out of 10 album, all strong together. It's fantastic. Very inspired by The Police, of course, but I think this album is amazing. So many hit songs. I still listen. I mean, Subdivisions, if I listen to that, if I'm there in the right, or if you have to say wrong mood, it still moves me today. It's absolutely amazing. I love this album. Yeah.
What moves you the most to that? Alex's vocals?
Alex? He doesn't do vocals.
He does on the song Subdivisions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No.
On the record?
Yeah, that's him saying Subdivisions. Track.
Yeah.
All right. I gotta. Is that true?
Yes, it is. 100%.
Watch it live. Yeah.
Yeah. Rush do a lot of things live that. Yeah.
Oh,
nowadays, it's yeah, but Alex's voice isn't that great in singing, but yeah. He does Subdivisions. That's true. He what Rush has one really good thing. They do. I think at Getty, one of his strengths is to make the vocal lines in the verses. His melody line is often better than the chorus. I don't know if you guys have ever thought about it, but that's how I feel about them. It's they often do. They have a strong melody line in the verses, in the vocal harmony.
Okay.
Yeah, my opinion. Yep.
Oh no, that's fine. I'm glad you brought it up, because I'm sure that there are others that feel that same way. Cool. So, two albums left. What order do you guys think this is in? Metal Dan, if you had to wager a bet, what do you think?
Presto. Has that not been? Yeah.
Okay. Mike, what do you think?
I'm thinking Moving Pictures is going to be number one.
Okay. Anthony?
Yeah, I agree with Mike. I can't actually think what could be number two. That's why I'm not deep in Rush, but I'm, you know,
Number two is a huge album for them as well.
That'd be Permanent Waves.
Just by looking at the tracks on it as well. Johan, what do you think? What's two and what's one? Johan, can't hear you.
Permanent Waves and Moving Pictures.
Okay. Brad, what do you think is two and one?
It's going to be Permanent Waves and then, Moving Pictures.
Okay. Well,
we'll see.
Well, we'll see. We'll see if the voters have been a little strange with number two. So at number two.
Oh my gosh.
We reached the point of no return.
There you go. All right. At number two. It is Permanent Waves. And here's the thing with that. You know, you try to think of, as Anthony said, he couldn't think of what other album, but you have an album that side one is Spirit of Radio, Free Will, and Jacob's Ladder. Three huge songs for not only the band, but for, again, U.S. radio. These, at least two of the three got played every single day, and Jacob's Ladder got thrown in there every once in a while, at least in quote-unquote modern U.S. radio. Permanent Waves, who wants to talk about this one? Go ahead, Dan. Oh, no, you were shutting the mic off. I thought you were turning it on. Okay.
Dan's been a little silent during this show. He needs to jump in there. Maybe he's waiting for number one.
I probably got this list all wrong, and I don't know. I know that my most memorable Rush moment was probably when Mr. Big actually opened on that Presto tour. I remember that quite well. I saw, like I said, Rush a couple times. But for some reason, and then now Mr. Big is retiring. So it was a good connection package there with the bass players on that. But that's nothing to do with Moving Pictures and these albums. So you did.
You prefer Billy Sheehan to Les Claypool then?
Yeah, totally.
Even though Primus is now going around doing Rush songs.
Yeah, well, that's cool. I wish Rush would do Rush songs. I wish the two could, there's no bad feelings. I wish they could just carry on, but they can't do it.
Well, since I know that you don't read Blabbermouth, one of the headlines this week was that they were kind of throwing songs around together and that they sound about as good as the worst Rush cover band out there. So.
The new Guitar World magazine has a new guitar line coming out. They're still around. They're still heavy. They're still likable and would sell a lot of tickets. And they would do great for a Vegas residency and stuff like that. And I don't know. I realize the death of their drummer was a big deal to them. But carry on. That's it.
Okay.
They have their reasons. I can't change it, but I can see it as a fan. And I wish I had probably seen a few of those tours that I ignored of theirs. But, like I said, I had my 5 years or so of shows and I was good and I had moved on. But they're still relevant today. That's the thing I want to key on. So back to you guys and go on mute.
So just to play devil's advocate, Dan, my reason for not wanting them to do anything is Paul Rodgers with Queen. That's all I'll say.
All right.
Permanent Waves. Who wants to talk about this one?
It's a great album, of course. Uh, Spirit Radio is one of the best rock songs ever made. I think it's a happy song. I love it. Of course.
Well, you've got the reggae in there, as you mentioned before, which possibly is maybe Police influenced, as you mentioned. Mm. The thing that I always loved about that song, not only the guitar intro and not only the reggae part, but coming out of, I mean, how do you even describe that part? That reggae part, there's, and not only that, there's right during like the solo part where everything all of a sudden like kicks into just weird time signatures where, again, just think of that, how fickle radio is and how good this song is that today it's still played on US radio just because of how important a song it is. But yet you'll have pundits tell you, well, you can't mix this style with that style with the other thing. Yet Rush in this song is mixing progressive, reggae, rock, and whatever else you want to throw in there. So, yeah. Sorry, Johan, I cut you off.
No problem. Spirit of Radio is just another song that Rush, the melody line in the verse is amazing. Begin the day with a friendly voice. You know, it's wow. It's so good. It's makes you happy.
Yeah. Well, you said it, the happy song.
So, but I have the opportunity to see Entre Nous. They played it live in Malmö here in Sweden when I saw them, I don't know, 2010 or 11 or 12, I don't remember. But great that they pulled back that song. Yeah.
Great song.
Yeah. Really great.
Yeah, this album really put them on the map for the world. And you got to figure they came out of Hemispheres here, and they kind of hung on a little bit with Natural Science to their long song thing, but the rest of them are all just great songs. I mean, maybe a little bit on the long side, but for radio, but yeah. When I heard this album, I was like, "Holy crap! This is like they've figured it all out how to tie." They're kind of past with where they're going kind of a thing. I think it's a brilliant album. Definitely deserves to be number two.
Okay. All right. So quickly here, I'll just count down 19 to one.
Okay. Before you go real quick, just a little note. When I saw him on this tour, the opening band, 38 Not So Special. I still don't understand why with two drummers, they're not even doing half of what Neil Peart's doing. Why do they have two drummers?
They play the exact same thing.
They are playing the same damn thing. There's nothing. I've watched them. I'm like, what the hell? I mean, obviously somebody's got a picture of one of the guys with a goat or something or they're related, and I don't know what's going on there. Anyway, I apologize for the tangent. So go back to the countdown, Victor.
That's fine, Brad. Just hold on loosely.
Don't let go.
There you go. All right.
Can we get Johan to sing that? I think can we all talk about how great Johan's singing was of Spirit of Radio? A plus.
Yeah.
School.
All right. 19, Vapor Trails. 18.
For a minute, I thought it was number one.
Counterparts. 17, Caress of Steel. 16, Test for Echo.
Great album.
15, Hold Your Fire.
Mm-hmm.
14, Rush. 13, Presto. 12, Clockwork Angels. 11, Snakes and Arrows. 10, Roll the Bones. 9, Power Windows. 8, Hemispheres. 7, Grace Under Pressure. 6, A Farewell to Kings. 5, 2112. 4, Fly By Night. 3, Signals. 2, Permanent Waves. And we all know it. Number 1, by a lot, Moving Pictures. For me, Moving Pictures, I had a cousin who was kind of a fair weather music fan. But usually when he would bring bands to my attention, there have been a few over the years that I've really gotten into. I remember he told me that Rush was going to be the next big thing. And I was like, who's Rush? He's like, you have to hear the song Tom Sawyer. So it was before it became huge on the radio, slightly before that. But then once it hit radio, I mean, it's never left, essentially. Again, we've been talking about how big some of these albums are. 1 through 4 on side one of Moving Pictures. Tom Sawyer, Red Barrichetta, YYZ, and Limelight. Again, every single day on U.S. radio since the early 80s. 81. So this album is just huge, and no surprise to me anyway that it was number one. Who wants to talk some Moving Pictures?
Yes, who wants?
Johan is waiting.
Yeah, it's amazing album. My favorite song is right now Witch Hunt and Vital Signs. Those two are,
wow,
especially those two I listen to a lot. It's worthy of all the good comments. It's amazing album. It must have felt very fresh when it came out. I think it's so fun to read about that period of time for Rush when they played, because they made from they went from theaters to stadiums and sold out Toronto Maple Leafs Garden and all that. I think it's well worth. It's a masterpiece. As you said, Victor, it's a big record in the U.S. Not here, not at all, but no. U.S., U.K., it's big, but not in Sweden.
What Rush album was big in Sweden?
None. But they have a big following. But when they played here the first time since the 70s, they sold out the biggest stadiums here. Okay. So, and I was there. So it was, they were well, I mean, we all waited for them. But they all played, when after that, they came back for every tour. And it was sold out. So Rush were big in Sweden, but they never had any hit. And I don't think I ever heard Tom Sawyer played on Swedish radio. I can hear Ghost one time, two times a day on Swedish national radio, but you never hear Rush.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, this album got up to 32 in Sweden, which I'm guessing that's not that great. UK, it was number 3 at its peak, and US was number 3 at its peak. Canada, believe it or not, number 1.
What a shock.
Yeah, I'm finding it very hard to imagine any Rush song on the radio. So when I hear you describing US radio, I just can't get my head around it.
The thing is, back then, radio was kind of left up to the DJ. The DJ picked the songs. That's not the case nowadays.
I'm talking about even like ever.
Yeah.
But it's amazing. I mean, I watch some, not a lot, NHL hockey, but you can hear from the arena, they play Tom Sawyer.
Oh yeah.
At the NHL hockey game in 2024. That's amazing.
Any US sport has it, because I mean that the intro, Neil Peart's intro to that has been sampled a million times. So you'll even hear it with other music that they'll play in the arenas.
So that intro to that song is just, it sounds like it was recorded yesterday.
Just
so fresh.
Just to give you guys an idea, I'm going to go through their 19 albums real quickly, and not all of them have songs that are still on the radio all the time, but Find My Way and Working Man get played on US radio. Fly By Night, Anthem. Bastille Day. That's probably the only one off of that album. They said 2112, all of side one.
The poop song.
Closer to the Heart.
Yeah.
Let's see. I guess Hemispheres is probably the one out of these right now. Yeah, that one
didn't have a song that made it on the radio.
Yeah. Then you come back with, like I said before, Spirit of the Radio, Free Will, Jacob's Ladder every now and then, Moving Pictures, all of side one, Signals, Subdivision, New World Man, as I mentioned before. When the album came out, The Analog Kid got on radio. Distant Early Warning, Red Sector A got played when that album came out.
Where was he?
Off of Power Windows, Big Money. Big Money still gets played every now and then.
Mm-hmm.
I think Marathon was a single, I think.
Yes.
Marathon. Yeah, I think Manhattan Project too, wasn't it?
Yeah, it could be. Because I remember there was a few.
They played both Marathon and Manhattan Project at Sweden Rock. I think, I was, the tears were running down my so amazing. Yeah, sorry.
Hold your fire. So Time Stands Still, at the time, got a lot of airplay because Amy Mann sings on that. Until Tuesday was a big band at that time, at least. Their one song was big.
Yep.
I mean, it's saying that Prime Mover was a second single. I personally don't remember that track.
Mm-mm.
Show Don't Tell off of Presto still got played every now and then. Roll the Bone, surprisingly enough, that song
still gets played.
Yeah, and so then after that, go ahead.
I was going to say, who's doing the rapping on that one?
On which one?
Roll the Bones.
Geddy Lee.
Geddy Lee did that?
Yeah, they pitched down the vocals, but it's Geddy.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Look at Geddy rapping. That's crazy.
Look at that. Okay. Geddy's jack of all trades.
True.
And then after that, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, guys. I mean, I've heard Test for Echo and Driven on the radio, but I can't say that they still get played. One Little Victory, they played live ever since Vapor Trails came out, but I don't remember that really getting any airplay. And the last two albums, Far Cry got on the radio when that first came out.
Yep.
And Clockwork Angels, I was living over here by then. But from the look of things, they released 5 singles off of that album. So go figure.
Well, while we're still talking about moving pictures, I might have told this story on here before. Rush have only ever played Ireland once, and it was on that tour where they were doing Moving Pictures and 2112.
Okay. So
that was recent enough, like, and it was a big gig, and it did really well, and I went as a, you know, a fair weather fan, but It was such an enjoyable concert. Like, didn't want it to end. It's just like, I'm having such a great time here.
That's awesome.
Because it was their personalities just coming across. Like, they were such nice, friendly guys, and that was pouring out into the arena, and everyone was having a great time.
Yeah, I think that speaks to them a lot, with all the tragedy that they had and whatever broken personalities they may have had, where you see that probably a lot more with other bands. I think especially after they thought that the band was over, when Neil kind of came back and they kind of circled back again, it seemed like the band got to a different level where they enjoyed every moment that they could when they were on stage. So I think you see that. I mean, I've never seen them live, but I have several of their, you know, live albums on Blu-ray and DVD, and it always seems like they're having fun when they're playing. So I think it speaks to that. And I mean, I think for a lot of the fans outside of the music, that's kind of the allure, is seeing the specialness, the uniqueness of the band, the individual parts, but also how they all kind of came together as a band.
Yeah. And amazing for, you know, 3 guys to have been together as long as they have and not had the infighting and the conflict, you know, to the extent that a lot of other long-term bands have. You know, they all seem to be friends, and, you know, there were times when, you know, mentioned earlier, where Alex was a little upset with his guitars getting pushed back in the mix and things like that. But, you know, they still stuck it out. They, you know, kept putting out quality music for a long, long time.
Yeah, I think a lot of that kind of leans towards, and again, I'm not the connoisseur that Johan is. It isn't like an Aerosmith or a Kiss or a Black Sabbath, where there were a lot of issues with substance abuse and with personalities, where the issues that you're saying with Alex Lifeson in other bands, people were gone, or they would just bring in ghost musicians to just play the parts. Whereas they were able to keep things together for that long of a time. And let's be honest, there aren't too many bands that went away as gracefully as they did, where they didn't have to say, oh, well, this is us going away. Please come see us. You know, please come check out this nostalgia, you know, thing that we're going to stretch out for 15 years. They
didn't need to, because the amazing thing about these guys is that once they hit the point of arenas, they never dipped. I mean, they kind of just stayed there, and they kind of even just kind of a nice steady incline. They didn't. And what I really loved about them is the last, I don't know how many years, 15 probably plus years, that they would do the whole show. No warm up band. They'd do 3 hours plus
with an intermission. Yeah.
Yeah. With an intermission. And yeah. How many, don't you wish your favorite band would do that kind of stuff?
No, they're sloths. Most other bands, you know, let's be honest. I mean, they were switching their set list up every leg of their tour, mm-hmm. every tour, you know, they were bringing in, like I said, they Vapor Trails had zero play on it, yet one little victory was played continuously live.
Yeah.
You know, and that's not an easy song to play either. It's a hard song to play. I mean, that's the thing. They could have easily gone the way that a lot of other bands, and they just did it their way. And you know, that kind of what kills me when I see other musicians slag them. There's one famous person that wrote a book about being a junkie in a closet who continuously complains about their popularity. But let's be honest, they never made clowns out of themselves like this person. So anyway, any final words about Rush? Anyone want to say anything before we wrap things up here?
Yes, I would like to say something. Rush is for me the best lyrics combined with sometimes strange music, but it's for me, Neil's lyrics are the most important. He writes words that speaks to me, and Geddy has an amazing voice, and he combines that with the music that's not so, I mean, it's not Dokken, it's something else. It's something that when you like it, you like it. And it's for life. Yeah.
It's Rush.
Yeah, it's Rush. It's something else. It's not for everybody, but if you like music, I think if you are a true fan of music, you like Rush. That's the words for tonight, boys and girls. Sorry. Yeah.
No, that's fine. And anyone else? Final words?
Yeah, I had the privilege of seeing with their sixth to the last show in Portland, Oregon on the R40 tour.
Wow.
Talk about like the best tour setup to go out on. And the, you know, just the way that they progressed. So it started with full stage, full everything. And about every two or three songs, they had guys coming out in coveralls, slowly stripping back the stage. And each section of the show was like from a different album, and they went back in time with it. And were using elements of each stage set from all their history. And when they got to the very end, there were just two little crate amps sitting on fold-up chairs and a five-piece drum set and just three guys out there, and they went out and it was like,
wow,
farewell, we're done. And one of the greatest visual things and auditory things that I've ever experienced in my life.
That sounds great.
A lot of people, that's interesting that you bring that up, because a lot of people don't realize how into the shows they were as well. You wouldn't think of them as a quote unquote theatrical band, but they always had an interesting stage setup. They always had something that caught your eye and made the shows worthwhile outside of the music and lyrics and everything else. So yeah, that's awesome. Anyone else before we wrap it up here?
Yeah, I'm gonna say this. I think they defied all record company logic to being as successful as they were, and to being again being able to maintain that. They were always classy. I'm pretty sure they were just doing what they wanted to do. They weren't chasing the hit or anything. It's just like, man, this is what we want to do. And the fans that they had were cool enough, like Johan, to go along for the ride and stick with them. And how many bands can say that? That's incredible. And then the three guys, of course, stuck together. Incredible legacy. They're one of the greatest bands ever.
There you go. Dan, anything you'd like to say?
On this subject, no. But you guys have done great.
Positive reinforcement from Metal Dan. Anthony, any other story you want to tell before we wrap things up here?
No. I of the, 19 albums, was it?
Yeah, 19.
I'm only really familiar with four or five of them, so it's good to hear you guys talk about the likes of Permanent Waves, which, I've never actually heard that album.
I know. There's your homework.
I know. These are album covers and albums I've been aware of my whole life, feels like. It's just, I got some work to do.
There you go.
That's a homework assignment for everybody watching this too. Is that if there's an album that was in our top 10 that you haven't heard, listen to it this week.
Yeah, Anthony sent me something else that was pretty cool. That he sent me as the graphic guru that he is, in his opinion, what his favorite Rush logos were from throughout the years. So it's pretty neat. Cool. Go ahead.
Obviously, number one was the first album. Mm-hmm.
It is iconic.
The funny thing, we're talking about Rush's stage shows. That gig I saw them, Geddy was wearing a Rash t-shirt.
Yeah.
You probably know. They came out, and I can't remember the story. They were going to see a band or something that were called Rash. That was the intro was a video piece, and then they ended up on, I can't remember, but it was funny.
Right. Yeah. They've always had a great sense of humor.
Had fun with it.
And then they ended up with, the guys from that film, I Love You Man, but that's all about Rush as well. So.
Right.
They had the exit piece video screen of that, and it's great.
Cool.
That's cool.
Awesome. So on that note, with our super long Rush episode here, that again, it goes to show how much people love this band and how easy it is to talk about them. So on that note, we will leave you. Thanks to Johan, Dan, Mike, Anthony and Brad for joining me. Thank you to Tony for joining us in the chat for a second there. And we will see you next time right here on Signals from Mars. See ya.
Subscribe to the show on all your favorite podcast platforms like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon, and more. Go to signalsfrommars.com for more information. This concludes our show.